You're listening to RevOps FM with Justin Norris. If you've tried to scale an outbound motion, you know firsthand how grueling and difficult and, quite frankly, soul-destroying it can be. For sellers, it means hours and hours of research, thousands of dials, blasting out emails as fast as you can, while also trying to make them as personalized as you can, and all the while getting ignored or rejected, and maybe you squeeze out a few meetings at the end of the day, if you're lucky. Now, for RevOps, it can actually be almost as bad. You're usually stitching together this monstrous Frankenstack of data providers and sales outreach tools. The reporting and attribution are terrible. It's very hard to tell what's working. And there's traditionally been no vendor with a vision for end-to-end automation of this process. Now, at the same time, over the past year or so, with the rise of AI, there's been this explosion of new technology solving for outbound use cases. Maybe you've seen them on LinkedIn too. Signal aggregators, AI web scrapers, AI email writers, automation tools. It can seem kind of overwhelming, but overall, I get the sense that there is this new model for a highly automated outbound motion that many people are championing. And I'm super curious about what it is, how it works, if it works, and so on. So to be our guide through this landscape, we're joined today by Jacob Tuwiner. He spent years in the trenches as a seller and outbound specialist before moving into growth roles. And just last year, he founded Sculpted, an agency specializing in outbound campaigns based on the Clay platform, which is one of those outbound automation tools I mentioned. So super excited to dive in. Jacob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out, having me here. I'm super excited. I think this is a really hot topic right now. And I don't think most people even know it's possible. They're still in the dark.
I agree with you. So maybe before we get into that, can you just give us your read on the past, like traditional outbound? And how is it performing in the market today?
Sure. So I think it's definitely getting harder and harder. There's a few headwinds. One of them is just more and more noise, especially in 2020 when everyone's remote. I think the amount of outbound email volume doubled. So the more noise in a certain channel, the harder it is to use because there's a fixed amount of attention and there's more and more competition for that attention. I've even seen people trying to use PayPal to send me a dollar or like 2 cents. To give me their 2 cents to just break into an easier channel than an email inbox. But that's one factor. The other factor is SaaS companies and really VCs slashing budgets, harder money, higher interest rates. And that means the grow at all costs narrative that has been true for the last several years in SaaS is now turning to more conservative, be more profitable. And that means that cost of sale is important. And having a ton of salespeople that are rather inefficient, manually researching, talking about SDRs, you know, unfortunately, 80% of their day is more or less data entry and research and some calling and emailing. So that becomes quite expensive if you think about salary costs, taxes, commissions, et cetera, relative to the, I think the average amount of meetings I'm seeing SDRs booked now is five or six on average. You're spending $60,000 to $80,000 a head, not to mention tech stack. So yeah, that's pretty tough. Not to say it never works. And I think with the right offer, the right target market, the right deal sizes, the right fundamentals, it can work. But even with the working outbound motion, you can for sure get more juice out of your squeeze if you add layers that machines can take care of as opposed to people. That's where Clay comes in.
I want to give a shout out to the sponsor of today's episode, Knack. You know, I love marketing automation software, but let's be honest, the email and landing page builders are usually terrible. You can't make it nice without a developer, and marketers are going to find a way to break things or go off brand. You do not have time for that. So Knack is totally different. You set the guidelines and then give your users a building experience that's slick, modern, and beautiful. When they're done, everything goes to your map at the push of a button. And don't worry, it supports global teams, approval workflows, it's got your integrations. So head on over to revops.fm/knack, that's K-N-A-K, and get a special offer just for my listeners.
When you first started out as a seller, first started doing cold outreach, were you just running the kind of predictable revenue playbook that everybody else was running at that time? Was that your entry point into this space?
I didn't actually even know that when I first started, I was 16 with a website trying to build backlinks to my website, my blog back in the day when that was a thing. And I was using like GMAS or something to like sequence people I thought I was a baller for having like first name in a variable. And that eventually evolved into like Upwork outreach as a freelancer and also door knocking, trying to get clients in college. I would go to people's businesses and just do cold outreach, I guess, in a certain sense in person. And eventually got into more cold email and eventually cold calling as well. So I've kind of tried all different things, all different use cases.
So getting into what this new vision of the future is and what it could be, and there's a great article you wrote on the Clay blog, which is actually how I got to know you, and I will share that in the show notes. But you essentially teed up a lot of the problems that I've alluded to about here's what's wrong with the model as it exists today. And then here's this vision of sort of an automated outbound motion that's more ops-centric in a way, in terms of somebody orchestrating it from an operational point of view. Could you just break down that process for us? Like, how would it actually work?
So the first thing generally people will do is account scoring, try to find a list of the right companies to sell to. And that starts before any tools get involved with your brain. So I generally will ask my clients or prospects questions about what they do and their offer to try and get a sense of if their offer is actually a good offer. If it's not a good offer, no pretty email script is going to work. But pending it's actually a valuable offer, in my mind, we'll talk through the problems that are solving specifically, and we'll talk through some of the symptoms of pain that you could spot in the wild by scraping review sites, websites, LinkedIn, posts, just really so many different ways you can figure out if a company's qualified. Generally, what we'll do is we'll then build a clay table account scoring model based on those symptoms of pain. It's usually a mix of web scraping, LinkedIn data, AI to properly categorize industry or things like that. And once you have your qualified account list, the next step is to find contacts. And Clay happens to have a copy of LinkedIn's database. So you can search for contacts at your qualified accounts using not just job title, but location, time and role, keywords in their description, etc. Now you have a list of all the right people at all the qualified accounts. You can waterfall data providers to find their contact information. And last but not least, use GPT to personalize the outreach with a mix of the account research you've done and the person data you have, which makes for a pretty mean email at scale. All of this used to have to be done by SDRs, clicking back and forth, copying and pasting, going into LinkedIn, checking their website to see if it's actually a good fit, and then going to find the right person on LinkedIn, and then finding them in Zoom Info and clicking a button to push them to a sequence. And their information is not even correct. They have to look somewhere else. All of this manual back and forth, imports and exports via CSVs, it's grueling. And all of that time can go to prospecting. So to give an example, one of my clients, Sendoso, they used to have like 30 or 40 SDRs. And now they have like, I think 3 or 4 and Sculpted/Clay. And one of their best SDRs just comes up with outbound ideas based on what he used to do manually. We rebuild it for him with Clay using this flow. And we send the emails for him in SmartLead. He gets Slack notifications when someone's interested and he can just log in, click a button, and book a call. And then we also even create call tasks for him in Outreach when someone opens an email. So he can parallel dial mobile cell phone numbers of folks who already opened an email. And now all of that manual grunt work is removed. He's like a supercharged SDR. You should think of your salespeople like professional athletes in that they don't have to think about where they are sleeping or what they're eating. They just show up and play ball. And I think your sales team should be the same.
I want to go back to the first step in the process and just understand better how you are identifying the right accounts. Because I've seen this personally, that's critical. If you don't do that well, all your subsequent efforts are wasted. You mentioned looking at reviews and looking for signs of pain. Like, what are some examples of what that looks like in practice? Like how you tell that an account is a good fit for your offer?
So it really depends on your target market and what you care about. But I'll try and give an example for one of my clients. This is a pretty wild example. They sell a software that helps any franchise brand that has many locations, hundreds or thousands of locations, track what's going on at the ground level. So each location has a Google My Business profile, and that profile gets user reviews, and the reviews don't lie. So what often happens is folks will leave negative reviews. It could be the bathrooms are gross, or the gas pumps are out of service, or the employees were rude, or whatever. Or it could be positive, like this new menu item is delicious. But at a corporate level, the executive doesn't know what's going on because they can't possibly spend their entire day reading through these reviews manually. So this company has a product that sells software to basically plug into your Google My Business. It automatically responds to these reviews for you. But I think more importantly, it uses AI to aggregate your reviews and then bucket them by sentiment. So That's what the software does. And this is a more advanced table, just to give you an idea of what's possible. We used Clay to first determine if it was a franchise brand or a holding company. So for example, Darden, Cheddar, and Scratch, they have like five companies underneath them, Olive Garden, a few other franchise brands. Before Clay, before AI scraping was possible, this company had no idea if it was a franchise holding company or if it was a franchise brand, which is like a whole different ballgame. They also had no idea how many locations a company had, and location count is a huge proxy for how much value this company will get from their software. The more locations you have, the more problems you have with this specifically. But with Google search, you can just look up how many locations a company has and it will tell you. But that's manual without something like Clayagent to search. And by the way, Clay's essentially Google search, web scraping, and ChatGPT built in that uses OpenAI's API key. So any web research that you normally had to do manually, you can do now more or less with Clayagent for fractions of a penny per search. Anything from, is this company B2B? Who are their competitors? Who's their target audience? What's their value proposition? In this case, how many locations do they have, et cetera?
Just to help people visualize how this might work, Clay, it's kind of like a big table, like almost like a spreadsheet, and it has a series of rows that are a series of actions that you can carry out. So when you're starting with that table, are you saying to Clay, like, show me examples of franchise companies and then look up this information? Or are you doing that initial research to find a list of potential franchise companies and then Clay is starting to say, like, is it a holding company or is it a, you know, et cetera, starting to do that level of research?
So both. Clay can source accounts and contacts for you. If you search like LinkedIn, for example, within Clay, you can pull in lists of contacts, companies, or other providers that you can create source lists. I'll typically, though, go into it to look Apollo or Store Leads or an Amazon seller list or some other place, and I'll pull in a list. But almost always that raw list needs refinement and it needs manual cleanup. And what you can do is hone in a Clay table to do that for you. Because there's often like five things you're checking for to qualify an account. And instead of doing it manually, you can import that list into Clay, build a Clay table to search the web. One common super easy example is like industry. Your definition of an industry is almost always different than ZoomInfo's definition of an industry. So if you sell a SaaS, for example, there's not really a good SaaS filter. You can put in computer software into LinkedIn Sales Nav, and you'll get SaaS companies and software development companies and other companies. And it usually requires an extra layer of human verification to check. So with Clayagent, you can import the list of computer software accounts and then use Clayagent to summarize their value proposition, what they do, and then feed that summary into another AI prompt within a Clay table to determine what industry it is. Almost like a Google sheet where you have a list of websites in one column and then you have an AI column where you can write a prompt and feed in the data from the previous column as an input. Every tool uses AI nowadays. Everyone says they use AI and it's all the same AI. It's all GPT or some other equivalent. The difference is how granular can you be with your inputs and outputs? How can you control the prompts and control what the inputs are versus the outputs, right? With Clay, you can feed in very specific data, scrape the web, pull in data from the website, feed that into GPT, etc., which you can't do anywhere else as easily to my knowledge today.
To walk through the process where we are, and we're still just building our list, but maybe you've searched for it within Clay, maybe you've gone to Apollo or whatever and brought a raw list of potential companies that is still not very clean in terms of feeling confident in it. And then we've got a number of steps, like go and find out if this company is a holding company or maybe it's a franchise, go and look up its value prop on its website, feed that back into AI, spit back like a refined version of its industry. So we've kind of already done three or four things and we're still just validating the account list at this stage. Is that right?
Yeah. It'd be much easier if I could share my screen and show. It's much easier to see, but...
Why not?
Okay.
And for listeners, they can go over to YouTube and watch this part if they want to.
Okay, so I'll show an example for a client that is about to come in. This is a demo table. So this company called Payrix, they essentially are an embedded payment software for... You could think of like any verticalized SaaS company. So for example, a gym management software. Let's say a gym management software sells to LA Fitness and LA Fitness uses the software to help their members sign up, manage their membership, and in some cases pay. So within the software portal, there's a payment gateway and the companies could use Stripe for that or they could use Payrix for that. And there's benefits using Payrix, which I won't get into, but fine. So they have a very targeted TAM, total addressable market, and they needed a way to easily tell if this company was a fit for that. And they have very specific criteria. The company has to accept card payments. The company has to be a SaaS company. It has to actually be a verticalized SaaS company. And it has to be a B2C company, meaning they sell to another business. And then that business uses the software with their customers, with their consumer customers. So the gym is a great example. I'm selling to a gym, which is another business. And the gym then uses my software with their members, which is consumers. And that is something that I don't think any tool could figure out today. They also want a LinkedIn company data. And they want to know the MCC code of a company, which is like basically their industry of who they sell to, which is pretty hard to define without what I'm going to show you. So here's how it works. I took some companies from their case studies page and I used Klaigent. So this is Klaigent. And essentially, I'm asking it, does this website have a page that refers to payments, payment acceptance, payment processing, etc.? And I'm just passing in the website. And then it's searching their site and I have it set to spit out the URL of the page right here. And so it's spitting out URLs it finds of any pages on the site talking about payments. So here you can see Storable. They sell to like storage facility companies. And here you can see the payments page. I'm then using this URL that I found and feeding it into a second Klaigent prompt where I'm actually scraping this page and looking for any text that talks about accepting card payments, specifically Visa, MasterCard, American Express, etc. And you can see here, true. So now I've gone from a list of company names, basically, that they accept card payments. Now I want to look at the SaaS and B2B2C. So here I said, your job is to summarize what a company's value proposition is based on their company website. This means you should return a paragraph summary outlining what the company generally offers their customers, who their customers are, how they help them, etc. I gave them the website. I said, describe the specific use cases as specifically as possible. Don't use generic terms like increased sales or increased efficiency or business solutions. Describe how the customer can specifically increase sales, etc. So quick aside, the more you give your prompt, the more specific you are, the better. So that's just a quick, very quick tip for getting good at writing GPT prompts or AI prompts. Anyway, so then we feed this output, which you can see here, Storable. The value proposition of Storable is focused on providing a comprehensive suite of self-storage software to help storage operators grow their business by streamlining operations, facilitating faster payments, protecting investments, and ensuring convenience for both operators and consumers. So anyway, I then pass that summary for all these companies into another prompt, specifically checking for SaaS. And if it's SaaS, output SaaS. You can see here, I've actually confirmed that these are all SaaS companies now. And if I were to check each one, you can see that it is indeed a SaaS company. Okay, now I'll give two more examples here. B2C was pretty wild. First, I passed in that value proposition summary, and I had this model tell me if it's B2B. I then had a prompt take that value proposition summary and come up with all of the different internal and external use cases for this product. Meaning, if I sell my gym software to a gym, what are all of the gym's internal use cases, like maybe scheduling gym employees and things like that, and external use cases, like collecting payments and signing up members. So you can see here, it gives a summary of the external use case or internal use cases. So internally, it helps storage operators streamline operations and protect investments, et cetera, et cetera. Externally, the software facilitates faster payments and ensures convenience for consumers. So I did this because I wanted to give the B2B2C model prompt a lot of context. And if I just asked Klaigent straight out to tell me if this company sold to B2B2C or B2B2B, that was too much in one step for it to figure out. So one skill you'll have to develop in the AI age is learning how to prompt properly and break down problems into multiple steps. So here I have a value proposition summary. I know they're B2B and they have a description of the company's internal and external use cases. So now when I pass all that information into this next prompt, the company value proposition and the company use cases, I then gave it five options: B2B, B2C, business to government, business to business to consumer. And based on these inputs, it outputs one of these options. And you can see here, I also had to give me a reason. So for this example, you can see, just scroll over here. This is the reason why I chose B2B2C. The value proposition and use case summaries indicate that Storable provides software solutions to storage operators to help them manage their operations and facilitate transactions with their end customers. This dual use case of helping businesses improve their operations internally while also enhancing the interface for external customers to engage with the service indicates a B2B2C model. And when I showed this to the prospective customer, they were floored. Their whole CRO, head of marketing, head of sales, they were their jaw was dropping. They couldn't believe
this. It's almost like a deep log, essentially. If you need to understand why it chose a certain thing, it's giving you that explanation of its thought process.
Yeah. So that was actually something that I prompted it to do. I said, aside from the output, I want you to give me a reason. And I did a bit more of an advanced flow where I had it spit out in JSON format, which is more of like a coding thing. To be able to Clay, it's best to have a technical background blended with go-to-market background. I don't think Clay is really currently operable by SDRs. The ideal path is starting from a coding background and moving into go-to-market later on, like a growth engineer. And then secondary is someone who's like a go-to-market growth person, but has some sort of technical skills. At least like table stakes is that they know the difference between a webhook and an API and ideally how to use them to be really dangerous with Clay. Really anyone can do it, but almost all my clients, my employee is a full stack developer who moved into go-to-market later on in his career, which enables him to create really wild plays where he's actually creating like custom servers and doing more advanced web scraping outside of Clay. But even within Clay, having that kind of programming background is very helpful to create, like, for example, this JSON output that's giving me a standardized business type value of B2B2C or B2B, as well as a reason for their decision right here in two different columns.
It's a technical ops profile that you're describing for me, like more of an architect level RevOps profile, but somebody who feels comfortable with these things, who likes stitching things together, building automations. I mean, that's precisely the sort of person that would thrive with this.
Yeah, but then their value and their brain can be scaled. So instead of having to train like 20 different reps on what good looks like in terms of account scoring, for example, you can have one person who knows and just build that list for you. And then the next step is finding contacts. Let's say that account list is now qualified. Now you find contacts at those companies and find their information, et cetera. And all of that prospecting work is taken off the rep's plate by someone who's more efficient and better at prospecting. Like, I can't tell you how many founders are like, yeah, my team doesn't know how to prospect. I've tried to tell them what to do and they just can't follow instructions. Not to bash SDRs, but 80-20 rule, like 80% of the output comes from 20% of the team. So there's just a lot of waste, and you can replace that with one good ops person with Clay.
Big thanks goes out to User Gems for sponsoring today's episode. We all know that outbound is tough. You dial and you email and you get the door slammed in your face by people who don't know who you are. Now imagine a world where you're reaching people who know your product, love your product, and are actually happy to hear from you. User Gems makes that a reality. They identify your customers and champions who change jobs and automatically push new contacts into your CRM so your team can follow up. Their outreach playbooks make it dead simple to get started, and their team is amazing. If you're not reaching out to customer job changers, you're missing opportunities. Head on over to revops.fm/usergems for a special offer just for my listeners.
And you also said something in your article, how the scaling of SDRs is not linear. And you see, you have a really good SDR. You're like, great, we're going to bring in another one and then we'll double our output. But those people that are really good, who are really good at it, they're not easily clonable. You know, the next person you bring in might only have half their productivity, even less. So the other thing that's really cool about this is that it allows you, like you said, to take the ideas of that one person and scale them out much more repeatably.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that I think people often... mistake, which is they think that sales teams are linear. Like, oh, great, I'll just add more reps and then I'll book more meetings. But that's not always the case because, yeah, performance varies between reps. You have to onboard, hire, and train. I think most sales leaders would agree the average tenure of an SDR is max 1 year, maybe two. And then you're off to a new one. They're either going to quit and go somewhere else, or they're going to try and get to be an AE. And it's because the job's very emotionally stressful and tough, and a lot of very grueling work. So it's just a constant battle of hiring new people, training new people, and it takes them 3 months to ramp, and then they're only productive for 6 to 9 months before they go somewhere else. So it's just a very hard motion to scale, right? And it's not even linear, whereas something like Clay, it's exponential because you can just run more rows in a Clay table and get more companies and find more people and send more emails.
So first, I want to just say that was really super cool what you just showed, and for those that are just listening, not sure how easy it was to fully visualize the end-to-end from just the audio track, but encourage you to go to the YouTube version of this and see the screen share that Jacob shared, is you can really see like all of these actions laid out end to end, kind of modeling the thought process of a human being in a way, like what they would actually have to think through a person's brain to qualify an account, and laying that out with detailed instructions for AI to then produce a determination of whether this account is qualified to be in the campaign or not. And that's all just building the list. I want to move into the contact piece of it and then into the creative as well to follow it in sequence. But just a quick question, what would you say your accuracy rate is with, say, a complicated campaign like the one that we just looked at? Do you have any false positives or false negatives, or have you been able to tune it so that you're like 100% pretty reliable choosing the right accounts?
It's very reliable for me. The two reasons why are because my markets that I sell to and my skill level with AI. So in terms of the markets, some industries, as you mentioned, the AI is essentially doing the person's job of taking an input and just making a decision, right? So a person could read a website and decide if it's a SaaS company or not, or poke around the site to look for a certain page talking about payments or whatever. AI can do that now as well. And with the right prompting skills, you're good to go. However, I actually, this specific clay table I was demoing, the leadership asked me this exact question. And the answer is, I told them it's about 90%, 95%. And so I think it's almost always worth it, the accuracy rate or inaccuracy rate compared to the scale and cost you get. But the primary reason why the AI messes up is because the input isn't good enough. Meaning, have you ever gone on a website and you didn't even know what they did because their copy was so bad and it was so
every day
so sparse? Yeah. So like, if a person can't figure it out, then how would an AI do it? So the AI is about as good as a person in terms of its ability to make that decision in most cases. So as long as the websites that the companies you're selling to have enough context to actually know what they do, the AI should be able to figure it out. So if you sell to an industry like roofers or like just really low tech, or maybe they just don't exist. Like one time I had a friend tell me he wanted to sell to like meat packing companies. And I was like, why? That seems like a horrible industry. They have no websites. So if that's your industry and they have no online presence, like Clay's not going to fix that for you. But any industry that has a good web presence is easy to sell to with Clay and easy to qualify with. And the last piece, like I said, is prompting. So if you were watching on the screen share, you saw that one of my prompts, B2B2C, had three prompts within it. And when I first just started writing the prompt to try and determine that answer, I wasn't getting good results. And so many people might throw a towel at that point and say that it doesn't work. But the reality is it does if you know how to work it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have had a similar experience just in the very basic experimentation I've done with Clay, where I was benchmarking some new enrichment tools. I was like, oh, maybe we can use Clay. And it's like any new tool, you hit a few roadblocks and obstacles. There's like a wall that you need to get over with any complicated app to get to the other side and start to feel mastery, to feel fluent. It was like the same thing when I was learning Marketo. Anyone who's learned marketing automation will have known that. So this is essentially a new kind of domain for operators or for people that are running this sort of play.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a middleware stack between your raw data tools that used to be the enrichment tools and your engagement platform is the most common use case. There's other use cases too. You can go right to your CRM, but it's generally taking a list from somewhere like Apollo, ZoomInfo, or feeding in lists from free trial signup webhooks or contact form submissions or from somewhere, processing that data, refining the data, and then pushing it somewhere else like your CRM and or your outbound engagement tool. But it's definitely complicated. That's why I have a business. It's a very valuable tool and also hard to use. And just like HubSpot or Marketo or Salesforce, folks would rather just outsource it often than learn it in-house. And frankly, the amount of people today that are actually fluent in Clay is pretty few and far between on the market. So that's why Sculpt exists. And when I found Clay, I found it for a very specific use case. I reached out to book a demo and I started using the free trial. And I didn't really understand it at first, but then I got on a demo with them and they showed me the full power and I was like floored and I was like, whoa. And I stayed up like 12 hours straight, I think, just like glued to Clay.
Super cool. So we've built our account list, coming back to this hypothetical play that we're kind of building. We built our account list and now you need your contacts. Are you just continuing to add columns?
Should I share my
share again? Yep.
There's two ways you can build out lead lists. The first one actually is you don't even have to start with accounts. You can, but you could also start with a contact list of lots of contacts and then just qualify on the contact level. So you can look up the website and check for a few things. Like one of my clients has a very broad market. So they only really need to look after job titles and go-to-market titles and check a few things on the website. So we, for them, actually just start off with a giant list of marketers, do a few quick checks, and then that's it. Some people who have a much more targeted market, like the one I just showed, start off with accounts first and then find the people at the company. So it depends on your use case, but continuing the flow from the last thing I showed. So now what you can do is you can create filters. So you can create filter views. So I just created this qualified filter view here, and you can say this will have anyone who has card payments is true and business type is B2B2C. And you could do employee count above a certain amount, whatever. Part of this enrichment was enriching with company LinkedIn data. So I was able to pull out their company LinkedIn URL right here, and I can click on find people. And now I can search for any people at any of these qualified companies on their LinkedIn company page, which used to be a manual rep action to go to the LinkedIn company page, go to people, search by title. Here I can just type in, let's say, like head of sales, say, or like VP sales or head marketing, P marketing, whatever it is, and filter by keywords in their headline, keywords in their about section, keywords in their job description, time and role, where they live, etc., and click preview. And now Clay is going to go ahead, and in this case, not returning titles, which is kind of funny, but it didn't find a match. I'll try finance. It will return all of the matches of any people at these companies that contain those keywords on LinkedIn. So then what you'll do is you'll pull these folks into their own people table. So just an example of that is, this is actually a list of people that I found from that table that have sales, I think, in their title. And now you can see I pulled in all of their account data is accessible here. I can pull it into this people list, their MCC code, which is basically their industry. Are they a SaaS company? Are they B2B2C? Their growth rate, headcount growth rate, all these things I've been pulling in with Clay. And now here's a contact list. You can see I was able to enrich the people with their personal LinkedIn data as well. So I can get their job title, all their past job experiences. I can get all of their past volunteering experience. I can get their education, where they live, etc. All in a new Clay table. And then do some cool things with GPT to create personalized lines based on their location or based on their job experiences or based on recent LinkedIn posts or anything like that you can now do on the person level.
And just understand the workflow of how somebody is doing this. This is a person like you, someone at your company, this kind of technical ops profile. And they're like, hey, we have a new campaign idea for XYZ. And they're going to work kind of building this table and running this. Is that right?
Yeah. Typically, we'll ideate outbound plays with clients based on their target market. So we'll break it down into like different personas or different account, first different account segments, different offers, different personas within those accounts, different angles for each persona. And you can spider web out like 10 or 20 different ideas pretty easily. And then we'll go ahead and we'll run the account list, segment the account list, find all the people in each segment, in each persona, and personalize the emails accordingly based on that.
So maybe then it would be great to go into the creative piece and the personalizing of the emails and how that works, and feel free to share again if it's appropriate. And this is one of the more interesting ones. I think that AI generated emails, it can make some people uncomfortable. Quite frankly, sometimes it makes me uncomfortable, the thought of it. And so I would love to understand how it works and how it's generating this personalized data that feels legitimate, for lack of a better word, feels genuine, feels like a person wrote it.
Sure. I think I've actually found that it depends on how you approach it, right? Like, I think if you do the AI thing right, people can't usually tell that it's AI. I did a recruiting sequence once and all the candidates were like, that was a great handwritten email. I'll talk through how that works now. Sure. So let me pull up a really popular example that I built with. This is actually a different campaign, but I'll show an example for Sendosa I built that did really well. People really liked it. I think you'll see why here. So Clay powered this entire campaign. And essentially what we did is we did this for Sendosa. For those of you who don't know Sendosa, I'm guessing you do, but they're essentially a direct mail gifting platform. So they help sales teams send gifts to prospects and customers to build relationships and build pipeline. And I thought it'd be funny if we could send personalized gifts to people at scale. So I scraped people's LinkedIn profiles and I used AI to figure out something unique about them that's cool. And then I used that to come up with funny gift ideas for them. So this guy, hey Naveed, saw on LinkedIn you are skilled in English and Urdu. Thought you'd like this fluent in English and Urdu deal with it mug. And then I used a blank mug image from Amazon and I just piped this text from the gift idea onto the mug. And I said, Sendoso is the number one personalized gifting platform for revenue teams. Would love to set some time to chat and show you what's new at Sendoso. If you're learning more, apply with Urdu Narrowly Talented. So I gave this talent as an input and I had the AI come up with a punny line for them to respond with right here. And this was printed for thousands of people and they all got personalized mugs with some pretty funny outcomes.
And was it all related to the languages that they speak, or for each one, it might've been a completely different vector of personalization?
Each one, some people were like volunteering or charity they've done. Some of it is like work experience. Some of it's recent LinkedIn posts. Some of it could be interests or hobbies. They talk about like sports teams on their LinkedIn profile. So it was totally customized for every person.
Which is quite frankly the thing that a BDR is doing. Not always very successfully, but they're looking at the LinkedIn profile. They're trying to figure out some way to do this.
How to break through the noise. Then we did a play where we looked on their LinkedIn location. And because of what you said actually around, I don't live in that spot. So I took their profile location and I used the GPT integration with Clay to normalize the location to a general area. So like instead of saying New York City, New York, United States, which is like the direct data from LinkedIn, you can pass it into GPT and turn that into the NYC area or the DFW area. And now it looks way more normal. I then searched for a restaurant Yelp in their area, a top restaurant, and I linked to that restaurant in their area. And I said, with Sendoso, you can send your prospects personalized gift cards to their favorite restaurant, for example, book more meetings, right? After calling out the restaurant. And then I once again scraped the restaurant Yelp page and said, if open to learning more, apply Blazing Bites for a $25 gift card to Firehouse Gastro Park on me. It's a Wings place. And this is another punny line. People responded with pretty funny replies. I'll show you one example that I thought was hilarious. The AI came up with a response line for that gift card called Unburgerleavable America Cocktails. So this person responded, Unburgerleavable America Cocktails. Thanks for reaching out. I'd love to learn more. So you can see they responded to these things pretty positive. Not always positive, of course, but that's the case with any outreach. But I'm getting some pretty positive and funny replies from these folks.
And so you mentioned replies, and I was going to ask this, like most people running outbound have seen their reply rates decline, you know, 1%, 2%, not uncommon from people I've spoken to. What sort of reply rates could people expect with a campaign like this executed well?
This campaign was getting a 5 to 6% response rate, and I think 40% of them were positive replies. It's not always that good. What I would say is that when people ask me this question, I turn it back around on them because it's always different for every person and what their industry is. Like we're selling to salespeople offering them cookies. So it's like pretty obvious like why this would be so high. But if you're selling to cybersecurity folks who are hard to sell to and notoriously difficult, it's going to be lower. But whatever you're doing now manually, Clay can do faster and cheaper than what you're doing now. And with the same level of quality. Ideally, it can also increase that performance as well because you'll have better targeting and better messaging. But at the very least, worst case scenario, it will be faster and cheaper than your current system.
Coming back to our workflow, we built our list, we found our contacts, we've discovered vectors of personalization and built some personalized content. Are you then having a set of email bodies that you then push into an outreach tool, or what's that kind of last mile to actually get it sent out?
Yeah, so all those personalization fields are created in a Clay table. We're finding their email with a waterfall of different providers in Clay. So we're checking 5 to 10 providers looking for an email. And if we don't find one, we check the next one and we check the next one. We only pay when we find a match, which is true for work emails, personal emails, and mobile sales and company phones. So pretty valuable to broaden your coverage like that and minimize cost. And so once we have that list of contact data, we actually often do that step before personalizing because it only makes sense to personalize if you have information to send to. But just like a typical mail merge where you'd be merging in personalized fields, like I used to have, before Clay, just to give you an idea of what I used to do, I used to have a VA in the Philippines building lead lists for me. And then I would pass on my leads to an American and I would pay them $1 per email to write a customized opening email sentence in a spreadsheet for every person. And then I would merge those emails into like a first line variable in my email sequencing tool so that every email had a personalized opening line. And now AI is doing that for me. Just push them right from Clay into Outreach, Sales Loft, Instantly, or SmartLead, or import manually via CSV into those tools or another tool, just like you would before.
And then is an SDR going into that tool and running those individual steps, or do you have those automated as well?
I typically run them for the SDR and let them know what's going on. And I set up a Slack channel with a webhook to alert the SDR when someone responds with interest, and they can just click a button to open the specific thread and respond and book a call. And then those meetings booked are also tracked in Airtable and in their CRM. And yeah, it's a pretty easy system for the SDR. He just basically tells me what he wants to do, like an idea, and then we build it and ship it, and then he gets the book calls.
Once you have a play like this set up, something that works, can you do it on a lights out basis where Clay will regularly run a batch job almost and say like, let's find new accounts, let's find new contacts?
Clay does not have that natively yet. Unfortunately, I think it's in their roadmap though, because lots of people have requested it. And I have a developer. And so for my clients, we've just built our own server to queue up, let's say a week or 2 weeks or a month to check and then push into Clay. So Clay can receive information. We essentially use custom code to enable that. So yeah, the short answer is yes, it's possible. It just depends on your resources. In terms of natively within Clay, it's not yet possible to my knowledge, but they're shipping new features all the time. And I'm pretty sure that's on the roadmap to be done this quarter.
Another question that comes up for me is validating the list against data that's already in Salesforce. So in some ways, finding the list, I'm not going to say it's easy. It's clearly a big endeavor from what you just showed, but that's like one step. Where I find it gets really hairy is like, oh, who's already in our CRM? Oh, this account is actually already in a conversation and we shouldn't reach out to them. This one is a lead. You know, that due diligence process. Can Clay do that against your Salesforce data?
Yeah, Clay can look into Salesforce, HubSpot, Pipedrive, and Close, I think natively. And one of our main setup steps for onboarding a customer is the CRM settings, both in terms of screening out before outreach as well as logging activity back into CRM. That typically looks like checking accounts for open ops or for like a customer status, things like that. Some sort of field we can check in the CRM. And then in terms of logging things, we can create new records from Clay or create new records when someone books a meeting only or things like that. Typically what we'll do is we'll update a property in the CRM with like a status that we're reaching out with Clay, so people don't action the leads, but we don't always create new records just because like with broad outreach, you'd be creating thousands and thousands of records every day, which is just too much. So what we'll typically do is when someone responds with interest or books a call, we'll then create the record and log that in the CRM.
I think I saw you were using Instantly. They're Sales Loft and Outreach have kind of been like the Coke and Pepsi of the sales engagement game for a long time. They're the incumbents. Some people like them. I think they're kind of like the devils you know. And then there's this new breed, Instantly, and there's a few others that I've seen out there. How do you view this kind of new breed of platform, or what do you like when it comes to sales engagement?
Yeah, so we actually use SmartLead now. Instantly has a really nice interface, and I started out with them, but SmartLead has the best API I've ever seen. Outreach and Sales Loft, I think, were like the forefront of sequencing tools when sequencing became popular in B2B, SaaS, and they really took over. They have nice interfaces, and I think what they do well is orchestrating prospects. They became like a pretty good CRM for the outbound stage, like engagement tools. So rather than having all of those contacts live in your actual CRM, which can be expensive, you can store these prospects in an outreach engagement tool like Outreach or Sales Loft and have a CRM stage before they actually enter your CRM, which avoids clutter and better tracks the outreach process. But where they fall short, I think, in many ways is in their ability to send scalable emails. I feel like these companies are so large now, they have stopped innovating, which is kind of how things go. And they really, in my opinion, this is a bit harsh, but one of the main reasons why they have business is because a big SaaS company needs more pipeline. They hire a new CRO and they're like, we're going to outreach. Salesloft sucks. And then they switch and then they buy outreach. And then a year later, that guy gets fired. New guy comes in. You know what? Our problem is because we're using outreach instead of Salesloft. We're going to Salesloft. And they just keep switching back and forth. The reality is that you don't need to sign massive five-figure or six-figure annual contracts for these tools. SmartLead and Instantly are $100 a month each, month to month. And one of the big benefits of using a tool like this is on the deliverability front. I will say, I think that Smart Lead and Instantly fall a bit short compared to average and sales in terms of like CRM integration that's native, as well as, like I said, orchestrating prospects. But you can get around that with custom code. But one of the huge benefits of Smart Lead or Instantly is the deliverability issues, which I think is more important than orchestration because of the deliverability challenges people are seeing these days. So you can add unlimited inboxes to these tools from different domains and rotate them through a sequence, which means, let's say you want to send 1,000 emails a day, you can have 50 inboxes sending 20 emails per day, each one sending only one email every hour or every 10 minutes. And so over the course of the whole day, you send 1,000 emails, but each inbox only sends 20 or spaced out over time, and they're all personalized emails. That's how you get around deliverability issues nowadays. And unfortunately, average and sales out to my knowledge, you can only connect one domain mm-hmm. to your tool at a time, which means scaling outbound without adding spam is going to become increasingly more difficult.
Especially without irreparably damaging your primary domain.
Yeah. So you have to buy one burner domain, but then you only have one. So, you know, if you're trying to achieve large volume of outbound, I mean, most of my clients have 20 to 50 domains each, and they're sending lots of volume.
I think, Jacob, we are out of time, unfortunately, but this was so, so interesting. Thank you for walking us through your process and what you're doing. And we will link in the show notes some of the articles you've written. I'll include your URL as well if people are interested in trying this out with your help.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, Jacob.
For sure.
Hey, everyone. I want to invite you over to the RevOps FM Substack community, where you can sign up to get rough transcripts, show notes, longer form articles, and other bonus content. Just head over to revops.fm/subscribe to get free access. I'd also love to know what you thought of the episode and to hear suggestions for topics you want to learn about. Feel free to leave a comment on Substack or send me an email at justin@revops.fm. Thanks for listening.